If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Thank you so much for staying with us. Our road to the elections 2024, and we look at manifestos on Monday for an entire hour, and you can call in, you can ask any question. And today we are with the Good Party leader, Patricia de Lille, in studio with us. Good evening and welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely welcome. Thank you for coming to our studios, because, you know, it takes a while for you to come to Joburg on these
matters. No, I'm always here. Really, you know, I live in the two cities.
Oh, fantastic. No, so we really appreciate it. I just want us to look at your manifesto. But before we do that, just clarity on you running as the Premier, availing yourself also as the Premier of the Western Cape. You've availed yourself for two roles, or do we understand it correctly, that you are availing yourself for both the President's, as the National President, and the Premier of the province for both those ballots?
No. We don't elect a president on a ballot. We only elect a president of the country in parliament.
No, for your party. You are the elect of your party.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes. Okay. Well, we did have our national conference last year, and I was re-elected as the leader of the Good Party. And then we had done a process to look at, you know, our participation nationally. We're going to participate in all nine provinces. And our manifesto that we have been putting forward to South Africa, it's not a manifesto full of promises. It's not complicated. It's all about coming up with a recipe that can balance society within our country, to deal with, you know, the poor are getting poorer, the rich are getting richer, and we have to do something to look after the most vulnerable in our society. And then through the processes of my party, I was then selected also to be the Premier candidate for the Western Cape. Based on my experience of years in government, I'm born and bred in the Western Cape, and that the recipe to rebalance society on a national level, in the Western Cape specifically, there the imbalance is so glaring. And therefore, because of my background and my experience, the party selected me to be the Premier candidate.
So only the Premier candidate or the presidential candidate too?
I'm on the national ballot too.
That's the clarity I just wanted.
I'm on the national ballot.
Okay, so let's look at, as you're saying, you know, it's a very straightforward manifesto. You're not promising everything. I want to look at some of the things that you have experience in. You speak of the infrastructure. We know that there's a massive infrastructure backlog, but you also know the difficulties, because you've managed portfolio before.
Yes.
So talk to us about what is realistically possible against what you wish to present to South Africans.
Well, first of all, that as a country, there's no need to come with a new plan every 5 years. We have to look at our previous plans. Our failure has been implementation. Mm-hmm. So, and to illustrate what I mean and the impact on our economy, in 1994, we had the Reconstruction and Development Plan. Mm-hmm. Didn't implement, dump. Then we came with a new plan called GEAR. Didn't implement fully, dump. Then we came with the third plan, ASGISA, dump. And now we are with the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan. So what we are saying, that on the 1st of June 2024, very little will change in our country until we change the structure of government that must implement. I'm already struggling to implement right now. We need to review that. We need to professionalize the civil service. We need to deal with corruption. Mm-hmm. Corruption steals directly from the poor. Mm. So the situations in our country, the daily problems, struggle just to survive, there is no ways that all of us or those of us who are tasting the fruits of our new democracy with a roof over our head, that have got a meal to eat at night, can sleep peacefully. Then we've got no empathy, we've got no heart. Mm. While the majority of South Africans are still down there. Mm. Now, it is not their fault. It's not the fault of the poor that the economy is not growing. You can't punish them. So when it comes to infrastructure, there's a great opportunity. Mm. And I was very honored that when I was appointed as the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure, an infrastructure department didn't exist in the country. Mm. And my task, my mandate was to start it from scratch. Mm. And together with Dr. Jose Enzo Ramakgopa, we not only started a department that can deliver infrastructure, we were also mandated to come up with the infrastructure investment plan. Mm-hmm. President Cyril Ramaphosa says that infrastructure is the flywheel of our economy. And that's true, because if you look at other countries where they've invested in infrastructure, mm. there the economy has flourished. But we should not only just invest in new infrastructure. We also have to maintain existing infrastructure. And therefore, in our economic proposal, we say that we need to begin to roll out infrastructure far better, but government cannot do it alone. We have to do it with the private sector. And therefore, what we have designed in the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure is to how do we partner with the private sector? So we came up with methodologies of build, operate, and transfer back to government after 20, 30 years. Build, own, and operate. And that system has been put in place. Our challenge now is that we just need to stop talking, and we need to put the necessary resources into infrastructure development. And then you allow for the crowding in effect of the private sector. So that's one of the solutions that we are proposing.
Because you have experience in all of this, you would then know what the stumbling blocks are. Because the private sector, yes, may want to partner, but you've just spoken about the challenges, professionalization of the working the working staff within at least in government in general, and then corruption.
Of course,
you know that for a long time the private sector will tell you, we do not want to trust you with these funds because there is corruption.
Yes.
What were the major stumbling blocks with all the plans that you put together with Dr. Jose Ramakgopa? What did you find were the stumbling blocks with some of the plans you had?
Well, first of all, we started off on a trust deficit. Mm. And also that we had to work very hard to break down that trust deficit, to make the private sector understand that, you know, as patriots, you're sitting on billions of rand, you must reinvest in your country. And we've been very successful in that. But what is hampering the implementation of infrastructure? It's the current systems, the supply chain management process. You know, the Public Finance Management Act is responsible for all the corruption in this country. Because now you have to procure infrastructure, that's big item things. You can't use the same supply chain management process that you use to procure a couple of beds or banks or whatever. And so we need to change that system. And that is why Dr. Jose Enzo and myself, we said that you've got so many development agencies, you've got DFIs, you've got implementing agencies in our country. And yes, we must put systems in place, not only in infrastructure. Mm-hmm. We need to put systems in place that can detect and prevent corruption. Mm-hmm. And there are many systems around the world, including that we need to use more technology. Mm-hmm. Overlay all our infrastructure decisions with technology. Mm. Because technology can help you to prevent corruption and detect corruption. But there's a resistance to technology.
So the current systems do not adequately detect corruption in your view?
No. And you see, that's our problem in South Africa, is that we spend a lot of money on commissions. Mm. We are a country that's run by commissions. We spend 1 billion rand on the Zondo Commission. Mm. After the fact, to find out what went wrong, mm. we should be using that funding and invest it in systems within government, mm. IT system, technology systems, that can detect and prevent corruption. Mm. I attempted to bring in blockchain. Mm. There is a very transparent process of procurement using technology. Anybody can see at any stage where the procurement, but the resistance to bring in technology. So I think if you can use more technology, and obviously there's also a skills shortage, but I think government has invested enough into training engineers, professionals in the build environment. So now we are going to be tested. If we continue to implement infrastructure mm-hmm. using the same supply chain management system, when are we going to fail? Mm. So we need to modernize the system, really.
You're concerned about the gender pay gap.
Oh, yes.
Which I think is interesting. How are you going to tackle that?
Women do the same work, and especially in the private sector. In government, we've got an employment equity policy where if you've got a female DG, you pay her exactly the same. The pay gap is massive in the private sector. And we need to make sure that the World Bank shows that, you know, in the private sector, women are paid between 25 and 35% less. And so we need to appeal to the private sector to start implementing pay parity. Because if you look in South Africa today, my sister, you see the face of poverty is a black woman. And therefore, we are fighting, we will continue to fight for equal pay, for equal work.
It will take a while because the status quo remains because it benefits somebody. Your thoughts on how you're going to get the corporate sector, or at least everybody, to open up and to comply? How are we going to get that right?
Well, it depends on me and you. Those women that are empowered already, we need to also invest back into our society, and we need to fight for all women at all levels to be at the same level. We need to see more empowered women who are already in investment. We've got very successful investment women-owned companies in South Africa. We are talking about, in terms of the procurement of government, that we need to put in at least 40% towards women. So we are making progress, but I think we could have done more.
Let's take a quick break, and I see your WhatsApp notes and I also see your calls. I'll take those when I get back.
Point of View, Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m.
Thank you so much for staying with us. Good Party leader Patricia de Lille is with us. We are going to have this conversation until 10. We're looking at their manifesto, as we do every Monday. The hashtag is Road to the 2024 Elections, and hashtag Elections on Kaya. That's the hashtag. All right, Ricky is calling us from Oudtshoorn. Ricky, thank you so much for calling. Good evening.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Just have a question for the leader of the Good Party. It's to do with spatial apartheid in the area where we're staying, Oudtshoorn. There is, I'm confident, there's vacant land. And in that same area, you'll find that affluent professionals and business people reside in that area. So the question I have is, what is the Good Party's solution to this challenge? Seemingly that we have a major problem with housing.
Thank you, Ricky. You address this in your manifesto.
Yes, what we are saying is that public land must be used for public good. And as an indictment on all of us at all three spheres of government, that after 30 years of democracy, we continue the apartheid spatial planning. Mm. In fact, we are taking people further and further away from work opportunities. And you can see it in all our cities. So that's an indictment in all of us. So land is owned by national government, provincial government, and local government. And that land should not be sold off to developers. The good and well-located land, we need to bring our people closer to that. And that is one of the issues that Good want to address. Because we have been, when I was the mayor of the city of Cape Town for 8 years, it's exactly what I did, to bring people and communities closer to the city. And that was the biggest fallout with the Democratic Alliance at the time. Because we need to integrate our cities. I know when I travel in these small towns, as if 1994 never arrived. The white areas are still as white as can be. The prices of houses is very expensive, deliberately to exclude people of color. So I want to say to Ricky that one of the four pillars of the Good Party is to fight for spatial justice. And we will continue to do so until we use all public land for public good.
Yeah, because sometimes whether it's local government or provincial government or even national, they just hold on to it, earmarking it for something else. It doesn't mean it's not there, but they're not willing to
but
let
it. But you know,
it
is in legislation, in a national act of parliament. There's an act called GIAMA, the Government Immovable Management Act. There's a clause 5 in that act. It says that government must use land for poverty alleviation, for socioeconomic rights, for black economic empowerment. But there's not even systems in place that can bring that clause 5 to life. So the law is there, the Act made provision, it is just lacking the political will.
Yeah, and the government has been taken to court and lost on many occasions with some of these things, which is quite unfortunate. I want us to talk about the basic income grant.
Yes.
You want to hike up a bit. To 999.
Yes.
You understand government very, very well. Where will that money come from?
Excuse me.
No problem.
I get asked that question all the time. And because we are trying to, with our recipe, our manifesto, we're trying to rebalance our society. There's one thing that government cannot afford not to do something.
Yes.
Now, yes, the 350 rand during COVID, it brought some relief. But we employ the services of economists, of financial experts. So it's no thumbsuck. And we look at the poverty data line. For a family to have a dignified, decent life, just about to survive, you need at least 999 rand per month. But we took it a step further, and I will tell you now how we can fund it.
Yes.
We took it a step further. As the Good Party, we took 50,000 rand of our own money. And we went to the poor people, our constituency, in three provinces, Gauteng, Western Cape, and Eastern Cape. And we spoke to the poor families. We said, look, have you got an idea what you want to do to generate income for yourself? One old lady here in Ward 82 in Johannesburg, she said, I'm going to buy some socks. We gave her the 1,000 rand. The first week, she made 500 rand profit. And she continued to do that. And just selling it to the people in the flats and around the community. At one stage, she wanted to give us back the 1,000 rand, and I said no. So we had helped 50 people with that 50,000 rand. But it went so well. Just recently in Kabega, in Eastern Cape, there was an unemployed welder who can weld, didn't have money. We gave him money to buy steel. He is now making burglar bars and selling it to the community, within the community. And what we feel is that if government can upscale this project, whereby people have got 1,000 rand a month that they can live from and make a livelihood for themselves. So how do we fund this? We've also looked at that. First of all, we need to look at all the budgets of all government departments at all three spheres of government. And we need to go back to zero-based budgeting. You know what happened over the years? We just add every year, every financial year, we add on inflation and CPI. So it's a bloated budget. And if you look at the projects for poverty alleviation, there's a lot of wastage in there. You look at the EPWP, 4 billion rand. But when you implement it, government must first pay a percentage of 10% of that 4 billion rand to implementing agencies. The implementing agencies then appoint NPOs to implement. They also take the cut. By the time it gets to the poverty alleviation program, then really there's very little left. So that's the second thing that we say. But then, because corruption, over 500 billion rand is stolen every 3 years. We need to put the systems in place that can detect and prevent corruption within government. We're not a poor country. We're not just managing our country correctly. And the total cost that we have calculated that we will need for the basic income grant per annum, it's about 15 billion. And that is 1%, less than 1% of the total budget.
Yeah, I want to talk about your education reform plans. Yes. And you do specify the early childhood development centers being something that you really want to support and fund. In your plan, where would you house it? Because we know for a long time it was under social development. Then the plan now is to
basic education.
Yeah. That's the process is underway.
Yes.
Where do you think it's suited?
It is suited with basic education. Mm-hmm. Because to us, the first 6 years of any child is the formative years. Mm. And that's where you really shape that individual and prepare that child for the rest of the future. So we say we must invest more in early childhood development because there you can even, you know, in mother tongue, but you can also, children learn languages much quicker than what we do. Let them opt for a second language. And then by the time they get to school, to grade R, they are prepared and they are confident. And so we can do what we want to put more money in to get better matric results. And yes, it is improving and it has improved over the years. But if we invest more money in early childhood development, we will even get a better result at matric.
Your plan for free tertiary education for those who qualify, will it look like what NSFAS is or totally different?
NSFAS is, I think, and we think it's bringing some relief. And as you see, NSFAS has changed this year for the first time to also accommodate the missing middle. And we need to look at what we are suggesting with NSFAS is that currently there's a mismatch between the skills that are needed in our economy and the skills that we are producing. And we can use NSFAS to direct our young people into the skills that will be needed in the economy in the next 5 to 10 years. So we need to do that kind of exercise to know what the economy will need. And then
And so does it mean you would then prioritize those?
Prioritize the needs of the economy.
Okay.
So that, you know what, I mean, we were all young at one stage. And then, you know, you thought you would take something, you'll get a degree, a tertiary education, and a BA social science and all of that. But then a lot of those graduates are sitting at home. So we need to match the need of the skills in the economy to get our young people to provide that gap.
You're very concerned about the LGBTQ plus community and their safety. That would have to be a community mind change. And as you say, it would have to be a societal effort rather than just the party or the governing leaders at the time.
Definitely. I think that South Africans as a whole, we are much more conscious about people sometimes referred to as the other. It's a reality. And we cannot, the bullying of people in that field, you know, the corrective rapes and all of that. It is unacceptable. And we are really saying that we need to build a caring society where children are taught about their sexual orientation at a much younger age. That for us to continue to treat the LGBTQI plus, I always say it wrong, they must be integrated into our society, and we need to accept people for whatever sex. Because in the Constitution, you're not allowed to discriminate on the basis of age, gender, sexual orientation.
Don't shut up, speak up. What is that about?
Oh, you know what? It's such a successful campaign. We started 2.5 years ago. I really said that you can't just talk about women's rights in the months of August. It needs to be 365 days a year. We took 300,000 rand on social media, and we started a campaign, Speak Up, Don't Shut Up. And, you know, even in our own party, it was so successful that already we have been able to get rid of two very senior members in the party.
Yes, very recently, yes.
Because they use that authority of power to speak down to women. And we've reached over 12 million women. And when women have reached out to us, we've been able to do referrals to social development, to the NPOs and NGOs to help women. I hosted a golf day to raise funding for the gender-based violence and femicide NGOs. And I think that it's a whole-of-society approach. But we can't continue where our women and children are raped and murdered all the time. It is another pandemic, like the president is saying.
You would have to admit, which you do on your manifesto, that part of the work that has to be done is training of the police officers to align with some of the objectives that you have.
Yes, most of the police stations now are supposed to have a special unit whereby when you come and report a case, you get into a separate room privately, and there you can lay your charge. The last sexual harassment case that we had to deal with in the party, when the victim approached the police, I mean, she had to talk there in front of everybody else. And then afterwards they said, oh, but this is a high-profile person, so they didn't act. So, but the police is coming in at the end when you report the crime or the alleged crime. And it's impossible to have a police in every home. Because 95% of these abuses is taken place by a close family member, a husband or a wife or a partner. And so we need to get it into society. And we need to start with our boys. And we as women are also guilty of this. We treat the boy child differently than the girl child. That boy child need to be groomed from the beginning, because we spoil them as mothers. And one day when they are in a relationship, they expect the partner or the wife or to do the same to them. So again, it can't just be a police problem. We need proper counseling. We need to be helping women that are abused. But in South Africa, it is so bad.
I'll take your calls on 086-000-0959. I am in conversation with the Good Party leader, Patricia de Lille. We're going to be having this conversation until 10. So you can do the honours now. And you can also send a voice note if you like. Or you can send us an X as well. And you can do that on @Kaya on air. The voice notes come through on 063-680-959.
Point of View. Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m.
Good Party leader Patricia de Lille is here. We're discussing their manifesto, and we are going to be doing this until 10. I want us to talk. You are, and I haven't seen all manifestos, but for those that I have seen, you are the one party that has directly addressed the Gaza, the war on Gaza. Mm. And I just want you to articulate that as it sits in your manifesto.
You know, I think we took our cue from our late Tata Nelson Mandela, that said that South Africa can never be free until the Palestinians are free. But what we see happening in Gaza today, in full view of the rest of the world, you know, I was crying Saturday night. I went to a breaking of the fast of Muslims in Mitchell's Plain, where in an open field we were all having a meal together. But if you look at the response of the Western world, when 7 or 8 aid workers were killed.
Yes.
And, you know, even Biden came out and say, ceasefire. Now, there's no difference between the life of 30,000 Palestinians and 5 or 6 aid workers. So we have, since 2021 already, not now, we had a billboard just here in Johannesburg in 2021 already to say that we want justice for Palestine. And I think it's an indictment on the rest of the world. And we must commend the South African government for going to the ICJ and taking this up. Mm. But what I can understand in the Middle East and the whole Arab world, except Egypt and Qatar, but you hear very little of the neighboring countries. Now, our experience with our struggle when we were fighting against apartheid that was declared a crime against humanity is that the whole world rally behind us. Mm-hmm. Although some of them, except Israel, but they understood the human rights abuses. Mm. So we will continue to call for a two-state solution within Israel and Palestine, that Israel must stop even occupying the little bit of land that has been allocated. But the United Nations has failed us. This is now for 70 years that the people of Palestine had to go through under this oppression. Mm. And the United Nations has failed us. South Africa has stepped into that void of the United Nations by going to the ICJ. So we fully support the struggle of the Palestinian people. We condemn the killing of civilians by both Israel and Hamas.
You speak of also reforming the Security Council. You oh, adamantly yes. think it's time.
It's long overdue.
Yeah.
I mean, how can one or two countries have a veto power? But Africa is not even represented on the Security Council.
I know this is not on your manifesto, but what are your thoughts on the Western Sahara matter?
Same. They deserve to get their independence. We definitely support the Western Sahara people.
You've just spoken of the two-state solution. You think it's still viable?
You know, it is something that we agreed how many years ago. Mm. We can't just drop that. Mm. That is the only solution. You know, when finally after this war comes to an end and we have to rebuild Gaza and the side of the Palestinians, we must make sure that Israel has got the right to exist and Palestine has got the right to exist. Currently, Palestine don't have that right. So the two-state solution isn't something that we agreed on many, many years ago, and it must be implemented.
So I mean, in your view, what would it take to get a ceasefire right now?
It will take those northern nations and the friends of Israel, like the Bidens and some of the Western world, to come and tell their friend that this is genocide. More than 30,000 people killed. It can't be. But I think when the West will listen, those friends of Israel, I hope that they don't support Biden who is currently supporting Israel in the general elections that's coming in November. Because he's trying to soften up, because he's playing to the majority of Americans that are not happy with his stance on Gaza. So Gaza's now become a political football.
You are worried about load shedding. And
oh, yes.
Renewable energy is your solution for load shedding.
Part of that.
Okay.
What we are saying is that South Africa, for many, many years, where the cheapest electricity based on fossil fuels and coal. And we built and we got many, many coal mines and many, many thousands and millions of people that have mined the coal and that are living in those communities, you know, Barberton, all of those areas. That we need to, we support a just transition from fossil fuel to renewable. Mm. So what we have to do is that we have to retrain and reskill the communities that are now dependent on coal.
Mm.
And so that they can become the workers in the renewable space. What we don't support is that where all of these coal power stations, their lifespan has come to an end. We should not be renewing that. We should do away with them. But we want to see that the communities that is being reliable and dependent on fossil fuel in the coal industry, that they should not just be dumped. So we support a phase-in approach for renewable energy. Mm.
You're concerned about climate change. You saw what happened in Cape Town over the weekend. What are your suggestions on how to deal with climate change?
You know, I was the mayor of the city of Cape Town with Day Zero.
Yes.
It was going to become the first city in the world.
Yeah.
That was going to run out of water.
There was a desalination plan.
And that's the reality of climate change. It's unpredictable. Even if you have got early warning systems, you can predict a storm is coming, but you can't predict the severity of that. So climate change is a reality. And you can see like what is happening in Cape Town, but even here in Johannesburg.
Absolutely.
You pass your winter, your summer rainfall season. But even here today, it was raining cats and dogs. So the weather has just gone berserk all over the world. So no government or no institution can take policy decisions today without overlaying that decision with the impact of climate change. It's causing havoc in our country. We go from droughts to extreme water shortages. The next war is going to be water shortages in the continent. And I always say to people that water don't come from a tap. We open the tap and the source of water, where it comes from, we need to start looking at a new normal of alternative water sources. And we can't just depend on rain.
Cape Town, as you said, during your time as the mayor, I mean, you are a model city in how you're managing your water, obviously, when that Day Zero was looming. And hotels, everybody had changed how they do things. Why didn't we stay with that? Why wasn't that sort of a model city that everybody took and said, well, this is how it can be done, and we stick with and we stuck with that?
You know, when I said water's not coming from a tap, we must all just think that we can't just rely on rainwater.
Yes.
We had to look at alternative sources of water. And the one thing, there's technology available. We look at aquifers, water under the ground. And we had a company, and there's one in South Africa, that flew over the city of Cape Town. And this, they could measure and tell us exactly where the aquifers were. And then we could use drilling to get that water out.
Yeah.
So aquifers is one of the key solutions, and we need to find them. And then there is a new methodology that when you take out water out of an aquifer underneath the ground, you can replenish it by treated wastewater. So we need to look at that. We can't just build more dams and reservoirs. We need to look at other sources of water. Desalination is very expensive.
Yeah.
But even desalination, you can't just put a desalination plant anywhere. You need to test the water for 3 months to see the sand that's going to come through there. So you can't just put it anywhere, but it's very, very expensive. So water is going to be our next battle in South Africa. And we need to look at alternative sources of water right now.
Transport, big, big issue.
Yes.
People spend a lot of money trying to move from where they live to the workplace, almost left with nothing to feed their families. Your solutions?
We failed to deal with apartheid spatial planning. In fact, we perpetuated by even putting our people further away and paying more for transport. Now, we can't move the Khayelitshas or the Sowetos and bring them closer all at once to closer to work opportunity. But we can do, we can mitigate and stop the suffering of our people by providing a cheaper, affordable public transport.
Reliable.
And reliable, but even today.
Yeah.
You know, we're still subsidizing trains. Mm-hmm. We're still subsidizing buses. We're still not subsidizing taxis. Mm-hmm. And about 90% of our people rely on that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what is the problem that we can't get a reliable... You look at the money that we spend on these city buses in Cape Town and Rea Vaya and Johannesburg. And
Gautrain.
Millions. Mm-hmm. Millions. We need to get an affordable transport system that can at least get our people to work opportunities much cheaper.
Mm. Crime is an issue. It really, is an issue. What's your solution there?
There is no solution that you can just say that it is with the police.
Mm.
I think that's a mistake that we are making.
Mm-hmm.
We need more police. We need another 20,000. You need to have that balance. You have to deal with the socioeconomic issues and invest money there too. Then just investing in what I call the Skopskittendorne.
Mm.
You just get more police force.
Mm.
Unless you deal with the socioeconomic conditions in our communities, you're not going to be able to save crime.
Mm. Mm.
Or to deal with crime. So it's a combination of the communities working together with the police.
You speak of, you know, obviously the numbers are not going to be enough and there's so much you still need. But you also address the brutality in your manifesto, saying that there needs... Do you think there needs to be retraining entirely of the police force?
Well, what we are really saying that we've militarized the police. You know, so you now get lieutenant generals and colonels. Those people have never gone through the ranks of becoming a lieutenant general or whatever. It's just titles. And I think that that militarization of the police, which is also linked to a pay scale. So the higher your military title, the higher your salary.
Mm.
We think that we don't need those titles. That what we need is a structure within the South African police services where you bring detectives, intelligence, crime intelligence all together in a team.
Mm.
But I must say that we also need... a police force that's well-trained, and some of them are well-trained, but there's a lack of some capacities like detective work and intelligence work. And I must say, although we blame the police for everything, they only come in after the event.
Mm.
It is the role of local government, provincial government, and national government. Mm. You know, in the Western Cape, they put in 1.2 billion rand to train a couple of hundred, what they call LEAP officers.
Mm.
But the socioeconomic conditions of the people on the Cape Flats and Langa and Gugulethu is still the same because of apartheid spatial planning and because people were forcibly removed to those socioeconomic conditions. So you need to find the balance by looking at how can you transform those societies, how can you make sure that the conditions that they're currently living in is making more safe. Mm. But it's a whole of society approach that we need. And I can tell you honestly, I don't have the exact answer.
Sure.
Yes.
You speak of the Western Cape, and you told me also earlier that you've put yourself forward as a candidate for the provincial leadership role there in the Western Cape. It was suggested this weekend that you leave the Western Cape alone.
You know, you can either use a biblical phrase that say, God forgive you the fool because you don't know what he's saying or doing. But to me, really, I've never really listened to that character. His outburst was exactly like a second-hand car salesman or a salesman that's selling dog shampoo. Because that's what they used to do in the past. But it's part of their agenda of succession. You know that the Western Cape is a different country. And there's a big migration of people with money. Mm. You must see the retirement villages in the gated communities that they're building there. So now we say the economy of the Western Cape is growing. I mean, what is 10%? Or 20% growth is still a failure. So, yes, I've heard all of that. But you know what? The poor guy must go and read up on his history. Between 1948 and 1994, his parents were allowed to vote alone. The majority of people of color were excluded from voting. We started 1994 to vote. And nobody's going to interfere with our choice of voting. Mm. Democracy is about contestation of ideas. Mm. And what they can't stand is that better ideas is coming. But yes, to me, here's the punchline. This fool knows that they are not going to get to this magic 20%, 30%. So he's beginning to look for excuses and reasons now why they are going to do badly. But they will never stop us that fought for this vote to contest anywhere in the country.
Would you go into coalitions with the DA?
My party, and there are many of these leaders that have not even been elected. We had a conference in November last year. And this is our mandate. This is my mandate. Mm-hmm. Is that after the elections, when not a single party achieved a 50% plus one majority, that was the choice of the voters, and you have to respect it. Whether you got 40% or whatever, it's the choice of the voters. We are prepared to talk to any political party after the elections, not now. Mm. We're not part of this moonshot
pack.
Multi-party charter. I think we must give them a one-way ticket to the moon. We're not part of that. But after the elections, we will engage with political parties that approach us. Then we will go there. We will say, this is our values and our principles. And then we have to go back to the National Executive Committee of the party that will make the final decision. But I think coalitions is part of the future.
Okay. Just the one last thing that you feel, you know, anyone listening should really remember about what you're proposing as the Good Party.
You know, I'll focus on young people. You know, deliberately today I went to an establishment called the Legend Barbershop Training Shop here in Johannesburg.
In the CBD. Yeah?
In the CBD. Mm. And Kaya was there. And they can give you a report of what we experienced today. And I did it deliberately to show to young people in South Africa that where you were born and the circumstances does not determine your future. Here we've got this young man at 35 years of age with over 300 barbershops across the country, employing more than 1,000 people, has branched out to Namibia, to Lesotho, to Botswana. And I went there today, and they are doing haircuts, 4,000 haircuts free of charge every week, just here in the CBD in Preacher Street in Johannesburg. Because their trainees, they come in and they do their theory, and then they have to do their practicals. And to do their practicals, they need the models to cut the hair. So people come in there and they cut your hair for free. Unfortunately, my brother don't qualify because he don't. But 4,000 of them every week. And he's got a training school in every of the 9 provinces. And you know what? He's not received a cent from government in terms of the CETA training to help him. He can do much better. So while I was there, I phoned CETA, the CETA training office here in Johannesburg, and they said, oh, no, we said the first application went in 2022. Sorry, we lost it. I said, how can you have lost it? But they put in a new one now. And then they started questioning me. I said to the lady, listen here, it's your job. I'm putting in a complaint because my next phone call is to Minister Blayton Zamandi that you are not doing your job. So I wanted to illustrate that it's possible that, you know what, you can, if you are prepared to work hard and damn hard, you can achieve anything in life.
It's been wonderful.
But the young people, this is my last word, is that they must honor our past. We, this generation, we fought for this freedom. But as young people now, they have an opportunity to design their own future with us. You know, this intergenerational. And I'm very confident that many young people out there must come in and be involved and make sure that this generation don't mess up their country because they're going to inherit it from us.
With Party Leader Patricia DeLille, thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Appreciate it.
And if you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.